Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwendinger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review and follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter.
Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We both attended Splunk.com for 2021. Well, I mean, if you call virtual attendance. And I think it might be interesting for us to talk about the event, some of the talks we went to. And if you weren't able to make it, maybe it'll give you some idea about some talks you can focus on. But one of the nice things about .conf is that all the .conf stuff is online, the slides, the video for years back, because a lot of these talks actually refer back to previous years as well. And of course, links will be in the show notes for some of these.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
Now, one thing I did hear about this year's .conf, though, is it was a real shirt show.
Oh, I love Shirt Company. I love Splunk Shirt Company.
Yeah, those are, last year's was, or not last year's, but the years before, those ads were really good, too.
All right, so how did you feel about the format this year, David?
Well, I think we've talked about this before, that I'm not a big fan of online conferences to begin with. I think it's really challenging to attend online without being distracted, particularly being doing the work week. And for those of us on the East Coast, this was freaking horrible.
12
because
to 8.
It was all on West Coast time.
Yeah.
So while I wanted to take the whole day off and do .conf, I ended up working in the morning and then attending some .conf stuff in the afternoon and in evening because .conf ran until 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So that was a bit, so my days ended up being pretty long on those 2 days that it was there. So not a fan of that. And the paring down of the talks, if I recall correctly anyway, were 50 minutes before.
Mm-hmm.
With 10 minutes, right. You know, cut off 10 minutes for you to move to the next talk or whatever.
Yeah.
And this year they were all 30 minute talks, which was, I think, way too short to get in real good meat into the conversations and have some time to actually digest what they were saying.
And I think that's what they cut out, really. They kept all kind of the high level ideas, but they cut out the examples. They cut out, you know, any SPL or any dashboards that they could show you to demonstrate. And that was always the part that I really liked about .conf, is I could come back home and I would have an example. Well, once the slides were put up, because I could never copy it down fast enough, but yeah, you would have something you could throw into your Splunk and be like, all right, let's test this out.
Well, that was true for a lot of the talk, but there was one or two that I attended that was all examples.
Really? I have to go find those.
I can't remember exactly which ones off the top of my head right now, but there's... Yeah. But they have like 50 slides and 10 of those will be screenshots of dashboards with circles on them. if you're someone who's technically implementing like you are, that's really valuable for you. Not so much for me.
Well, I'm not implementing anymore, unfortunately, not with my new role. I should say that I haven't seen all the talks yet. So there's probably some cool ones that I missed. Although I did things a little differently, I actually left my work computer off for most of the morning so they couldn't get in touch with me. That was amazing. I almost wish I could do this from now on. I was talking with somebody else, like, I'm a morning person. I'm super charged in the morning. I'm ready to do stuff. I'm active. I'm alert. I'm awake. And then starting around 5 or 6 o'clock, like, I start going downhill. And so usually, like, the normal work day, by the time I get home from, you know, my commute at 6:30, 7 or whatever, like, I'm done for the day. I don't do anything else at night. I just collapse into the, you know, my chair or the thing, and then watch TV for an hour, stare at the computer for an hour or two, and then go to bed at 9 because I suck and I'm a morning person. So, but this was amazing. The ability to like do stuff in the morning and then get online at like 10 o'clock or so to, you know, review email before comp started. That was great.
Yeah, I probably should have, but didn't. Because like I said, maybe it's my own fault, you know. It's mostly my own fault that I hate online conferences because of that. I don't separate myself enough.
That's fair. I agree on the online thing, though. I have the same problem with meetings as I do with online conference talks. It's so hard to pay attention to the screen. And then the fact that you're on the screen, it makes it so easy to just alt tab over and be like, well, I'll just check Reddit while I'm listening. I'm still listening. And then you realize like 20 or 30 minutes has gone by and you're like, what has he been saying?
Yep. Or it's even worse where they mention something like, oh, I can Google that right now, which I've done before, and then get sidetracked.
Yeah. Yeah. They mention a product and you go look at what the product does, and yeah. Yep. Being there in person forces you to pay a little more attention.
Right.
And Boss of the Sock was a little crazy too. Again, it's
they
harder.
They changed up the way they did it this year, didn't they?
They changed up a little bit. It was my team ended up, I think we ended up getting 10th this year, which was still pretty good. Even though I bailed at 11 o'clock because I just couldn't stay up that late. I was just telling you, like I go to bed at like 9:30 or 10. I stayed up till 11. I was like, oh my God, I'm dying. The rest of the team.
When did it run to?
I think I got the last text, like the last Teams message at like 2 a.m. or something.
Holy cow.
Yeah, they ran it really long. And again, usually the way it happens is it starts at like 8 on site and then it goes till midnight. But that's not so bad because you're on site, like there's adrenaline, you're pumped up, you're like, you're hanging out with your friends, you're like, let's go. But like sitting at home on the computer,
So it's typically only 4 hours? I thought it was usually 6 hours.
No, it's usually 3 hours. Usually starts at 8 and there's like an hour of screwing around and then it runs from 9 to midnight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it if it was longer. Although I think if I remember right, the team got all the answers on everything just about, except for a few of the higher questions.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So how do you feel about not getting to go to Vegas? How do you feel about this last minute cancellation and making everybody go virtual?
Not surprised, but you know, that is so annoying.
This is going to be my first real trip this year.
So at the beginning of .conf in the keynote and stuff, they usually have some announcements and actually sprinkled throughout because not all the .conf, a lot of the .conf talks are from customers who are doing cool things with Splunk, but there are presentations scattered throughout .conf that are actually done by Splunk proper. And they have some announcements about different things that are going on within Splunk or upcoming stuff that's coming out with Splunk that had some interesting stuff on it this year, particularly the workload pricing. This is a huge deal. And actually, when I mentioned this to our Splunk team, they said that they were talking about this before, but I don't remember hearing about it. So maybe it's just I wasn't paying that close attention. But if you've ever used Splunk, you know the trials and tribulations of getting data into Splunk because they base it, or they used to base it, on volume. So how much data you put into Splunk is how much Splunk costs you, which then, of course, incentivizes you not to put stuff in Splunk because it costs you money to do so. So migrating to this workload pricing allows you to put as much data as you want into Splunk, but it's your activities on that data that are going to cost you money.
Yeah, that's always the struggle, right? Is do we just put in exactly as much as we need for detections? And then how are we going to, you know, do research and figure out how long the bad guy was on there if all we have in is the bare minimum for detections?
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a big deal as more people adopt this. Because I know virtually every organization I've worked for that has used Splunk, it, at some point is like, okay, we have to stop ingests or we have to find stuff to cut out because we hit our license cap. But it'll be interesting to see how this flushes out, whereas you say, oh, well, okay, we need to stop producing as many notable events now or something because we're at our license cap for Splunk, or it's costing us too much money to do these searches or something. That'd be interesting to see how that flushes out.
There's things you can do, though. You can do things like, oh, you know, do we need the search to run every hour? Can we run it once every 24 hours? Can we adjust, you know, how far back it looks? There's more options for sure than just, right. You know,
yeah.
Is this in or is this not in?
Yeah, I'm just saying that the question, the conversation now are shifting, and I'm just, you know, curious to see what those conversations are going to look like now.
Yeah, this should be interesting. Now the other half of that too is you still do have to pay for storage if you have a data retention requirement. I don't remember what the pricing is, but I think there is a additional price if you want to hold something for 12 to 13 months or something like that.
Well, in the cloud, if you're talking about Splunk Cloud, then they have different storage tiers there that you're going to have to work out with Splunk proper. Or if you're doing on-prem, gotcha. That's your own internal storage you're going to have to work out.
Yeah. Yeah, still have to store it. Still have to store it.
Yeah, but thankfully storage is relatively cheap. Although it's probably gone up recently because of the chip shortage and all that. Kind of like when that that factory in Vietnam, that West Digital factory in Vietnam, would it flood or burn down? I forget exactly.
I don't remember.
But whenever that happened, I remember hard drive prices went up. But still relatively inexpensive.
Yeah. So I saw there was some mention of the Splunk Dashboard Studio. Apparently gives you some more advanced options for building Splunk dashboards.
Such as? I didn't catch that.
I don't know. I'm actually looking at a thing right now. I just saw that it was mentioned, and one of my coworkers was telling me that he was really looking forward to getting out there and using it. So, but looking at it actually looks like it's less powerful. It's not a straight upgrade. For example, one of the things that one of my coworkers was telling me about, I don't know if he's listening, but he knows who he is. He was talking about how a previous place he worked, they set up custom JavaScript to like create interactive dashboards where you could update stuff kind of on the fly. So the new Dashboard Studio does not support that. It doesn't support some of the data visualizations like cluster maps and trellises. Doesn't support third-party visualizations. But what does it do that the regular Splunk does not? It has single value icons. Woo!
Wow.
Yeah. Chloropleth SVG images. Well, that's fun. And shapes, lines. Oh, interesting. You can add and edit shapes and text boxes in the new maps, in the new apps. So I don't know.
So it's more about pretty than actual functionality?
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible. Anyways, yeah, like I said, I don't know much about that one. I just took a look at it and saw that it was there. And I imagine for people that are doing the Splunk dashboard stuff, they could care. They care quite a bit. The other thing that starts with an S.
Man, what a smooth transition.
Is their new Surge team, which I believe is being read by Ryan Kovar. Is that his name? He's the guy that made Boss of the SOC originally, one of the two people that originally made it. And Haley Mills is on it. Haley Mills was one of the original people talking RBA a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so not the actress.
There's an actress named Haley Mills?
Oh, yeah. Old school Disney. She actually starred in the original Parent Trap.
Interesting. So their thing is it's a mix of old and new. So they are a team of experienced Splunk people and threat hunters and that sort of thing. And when a new major issue comes out, like looking here on there's the SolarWinds, the Hafnium, SigRed, and other things. So what they're talking about doing now is when these new things come out, they are going to build detailed blogs and content to detect these things. So I'm looking at the Hafnium one. It's got a summary of what's Hafnium. It talks about what happens, what the IOCs are, and then it gives you Splunk searches. So if we're looking down the Hafnium one, saying if you have your IIS logs on your Exchange server, here is a search you can do that will tell you the HTTP post to files in a specific directory. So they're going ahead and starting to build the content for you. Which is really cool, especially for stuff that's brand new like this, where the IOCs and the TTPs may not be completely documented yet.
I wonder how high that bar is going to be, you know, because obviously they can't do it for everything that hits the news. So,
yeah, so it's definitely going to be big stuff. And he did say that this is not meant to be like a final finished product alert. This is meant to be kind of quick and dirty. How do you figure out if somebody's doing this activity in your environment? But yeah, so I'm looking over this Hafnium blog and they've probably got a dozen Splunk searches to kind of get you started. Some for finding the niching PowerShell framework used, PowerCat, Exchange creating child processes, finding specific hacker tools that were used, stuff like that. So I like it and it definitely illustrates the stupid turning data into doing slogan that they repeated so many times that I wanted to rip off my ears, which actually wouldn't help, would it? It kind of illustrates how they're pivoting, where Splunk was positioned as, you know, where you stick all your data and then you can just search it free form and find everything you want. And now they're realizing what people really need is they really need content to make better use of that data.
Yeah, I wonder if that means they're going to have their own threat research team, like Cisco Talos, or if they're going to partner with like Cisco Talos or something to get those indicators ahead of time, or are they, or is this team going to be like those threat researchers as well, to get those the idea about what those things look like ahead of time or early?
I mean, it kind of is. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a summary and a, yeah. I could see it fulfilling that function.
Because if they had a, you know, if they were partnering with big threat research teams, that would probably be actually more bang for the buck, at least in my opinion.
Then they wouldn't get to do it themselves.
Yeah, it'd be hard to put that on your resume. But yeah, it kind of sounds like a threat research team almost.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of, I'm going to segue over to this other one you put on here for TruStar, because since we're talking threat intel, this is a threat intel platform purchased by Splunk in June 2021. I don't think they announced specifically how they're going to integrate it into Splunk ES.
No, I only saw this on one slide, which was like in a box within the larger box of Splunk Cloud. and they didn't really speak to it. They just kind of mentioned it was there. And didn't give any real details on it, probably because, I mean, what's that, 3 months they've had it then? You know, maybe a little bit longer.
Should be ready to go.
So they themselves probably have not figured out how they're going to use it or how it's going to merge with it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see. Is it like a paid feed that integrates with Splunk ES? Does it come as part of Splunk ES? I don't know.
No, I think it's more than just a feed, because it's actually supposed to be a threat intel management platform. So, you know, to curate threat intel feeds. My assumption would be, and actually should have looked at this before, but I didn't think about it, is maybe it's really, at this point, it's just a Splunk app, which was already made by TruStar, but they're implementing within Splunk or something, maybe.
That'd be easiest.
But they mentioned that, or on the slide, it's going to integrate with the threat intel framework within Splunk ES, which hopefully will improve it, because that framework has some challenges and could use some improving.
Yeah, I'm looking at their website, and it definitely, it collects from multi-feeds, then it normalizes the context, and then prioritizes and then sends it out via unified API. So, I mean, that's always been a problem, right? You get a whole bunch of crap from a bunch of open source feeds and it's usually all garbage.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see how good that is. Maybe I'll try to get a free demo from them or something.
All right. I noticed they kept mentioning SOAR and risk-based alerting over and over again, which is awesome because I love them, but oh my God, were they pushing that?
Yeah, well, this is the first .conf they've had since RBA was actually merged into ES proper, versus a roll your own kind of thing. So I think that's really why it's over the top now.
Oh, and that's interesting to see too, how RBA's grown. I think 2017 was the first mention, then 2018, 18. There was like three talks.
No, it was 18. Was it
18? 18 was the first mention.
Yeah, that's when Apgar gave his first conversation about the pipeline. I forget the name of it right now.
Yeah.
But that's a really good talk. Yep. And 2019 had three, I think, really good RBA talks.
Yep. Because that was there was a supermarket that did it and an insurance company that did it and somebody else. I don't remember the third company, Texas Instruments. That's it.
Yeah, but those were awesome. And actually when I went to .conf 19, one of the first talks I stumbled into was Haley Mills's talk on RBA. And I redid my entire schedule around that talk.
So did I.
I was just like, this is awesome.
How did I not see you in there? Did we run into each other leaving? We were both in that talk. I don't remember seeing you though.
I don't know. I mean, those conference rooms are not small.
No, they're not.
You're talking about, I think 11,000 people were at the talk at .conf. So
at that talk.
I don't think of that talk, but at .conf that year. So not terribly surprising we didn't see each other in that room, which probably held a few hundred people.
Yeah, that was in Vegas, right? Yeah. No, that was in...
Yeah.
Oh, it was in Vegas? All right.
Yeah, it was in Vegas.
All right, so 2018 was Florida and 2017 was DC. All right. All right. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Really looking forward to that. Anyways, continue on.
But they also mentioned in that same same slide deck that had the TruStar stuff in it, that they've integrated what they're calling behavior analytics, which I assume is going to be a UBA light function in the cloud. And right now it's in preview, and they marked it as cloud delivered / hybrid, which I'm not sure exactly what that means. And this is something else they didn't really speak to so much as just showing it up there. But on-prem, they showed UBA, and in the cloud, they showed behavior analytics. I don't know how similar those two things are.
Yeah, I'm looking at the docs page for it. It does say Splunk to Splunk Behavioral Analytics. It's a cloud-native UEBA solution, but I don't know if it's the same thing as their normal UEBA solution.
I don't think it can be based on my experience with their normal one, because it doesn't scale. I mean, in my opinion, anyway.
Interesting. To do it
on-prem is huge.
Interesting. I was talking with somebody else. I was asking them about that, and they said that Splunk's UBA was not good. I was sad to hear that.
Yeah, well, that's what says.
That's kind of sad, because I was really hoping that it would be good. And oddly enough, you know, I didn't see them really mention it at all this year. I feel like it was a big part of previous.coms.
I don't know. I've attempted to POC it before, but there were some challenges around that I never did get to. But I did have some work with some people who had got to use their UBA sandbox that Splunk has in the cloud. Of course, you don't get to see your data in there, but you know they have a sandbox-like thing that you can if you're working with Splunk, they'll let you get into with, of course. Has perfect data in it, so it's going to look nice and have everything in there.
Yeah.
And they liked it more than some of the other UBA vendors.
Interesting.
But like I said, that's one of those things. It's almost like talking to a salesman, because if they're going to build that UBA for a sandbox for people to play in, there are not going to be gaps in the data. There aren't going to be the typical errors you're going to find in a normal environment.
Yeah.
To make that UBA look as good as it can.
Yeah.
So you've got to take that with a grain of salt.
That looks like all the time we have to talk about Splunk today. It's a shame, because I feel like I could talk more about Splunk quite a bit, but no more time. Thank you for joining us. Follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.